Attention, patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zones, Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, patriots, and welcome to our Independence Day episode, which I'm also going to title, You Don't Need an Assault Weapon Until You Need One. Watching what's going on over there in France, there are some lessons to be learned on multiple fronts. But I am going to talk about that, and I also want to cover what I normally do, something related to the Declaration of Independence. I want to talk about that, but I want to tie it into a really great documentary that I saw this weekend that was sent on our morning commute Telegram channel by a listener. It was posted there, and I'll be talking more about that. I've got the title of it. As soon as I pull the title up here, I'll share that with you. But I don't have that right in front of me. So I have it in my notes for segment two. I will be covering that. I'll give you the name of that so that you can check that out for yourself and watch it. Awesome history about our Christian heritage and the biblical basis for resisting tyranny. And how that led to the Second Amendment and, well, all of our founding documents and just the moral imperative for the Declaration of Independence. Fascinating. That'll be segment two. And segment three, I'm going to be talking about World War III, supposedly starting on July 11th. And that's not just some loose cannon prophetess or somebody. It's actually NATO. NATO's got a surprise for July 11th for this NATO summit over in Europe. It's supposed to be a 1 or 2 day summit, and they've got a surprise up their sleeves for Ukraine. And one spokesperson in particular said that World War III will effectively begin on July 11th. So that's something we definitely want to keep our eyes on. I've got the details on that in segment three. But first, let's get into the news and commentary. News and commentary brought to you by Prepping 2.0. Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher with the podcast prepping2-0.com is the website to help take your preps to the next level. Now, I said that in segment three, I will be talking more about what's going on in France right now. France has fallen. France is burning. Now it's going into, the headlines are saying, the sixth night of riots now, and this is a Muslim uprising. The invaders finally were triggered to action, and this has spread to dozens of countries across France. Now it's spread to Belgium, and last night Switzerland. I expected Germany would be the next one to go up into flames, but this isn't over yet. And now there's reports of rioters targeting Christians and conservatives. So it's on. France is burning and is falling. But for the news and commentary section here, Michael Yon posted on his his Twitter account, and of course, he's been following this southern invasion across our border. But he's really got a good head for his former special operations, former special forces. And so he, you know, weighs in on various different conflicts and things that are going on. So he weighed in on what's going on with the police sweeping the streets. And that's in France. So they come in force with several hundred police, and they come through and they just sweep the street. They just clear it out of so-called rioters. These are insurgents. And I'll talk about more about that in segment three. But he writes, meaningless street sweeping. I've been in actions like this many times. Street sweeping can be effective against football hoodlums and that sort of trash. But France has a war cancer. If the French refuse the bloody ejection of millions, the French slave and die in dimitude. So what he's saying here is, if these guys don't treat this like they're at war, and they treat it like they're dealing with, like he said, football hoodlums, they're going to lose. Unless they're willing to do the bloody necessary task of ejecting the millions of invaders out of their country, they will become slaves and France will be dead. And that's the sad, hard facts of that. There's a lot of information right now flying around the internet and a lot of evidence being posted on various different Twitter accounts. Bill Gates is in the news again. He backed a startup that released millions of genetically modified mosquitoes in Florida. The company, which is funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, released the mosquitoes a week ago from the Florida Keys. Now, this is an older post, but bring us up. I think it was maybe even last year or earlier this year. Let's see if I can find the date on one of these others. But right here from Reuters, the first U.S. malaria cases diagnosed in decades in where? Florida. Five cases of malaria have been confirmed in Florida and Texas, the first time the potentially fatal mosquito-borne illness has been diagnosed in the United States. So there's a guy's account, Derek S., I believe it is. He, on his account, he says, I expose crimes against humanity and fraud. The facts, he posts, Bill Gates wants most of us dead. Of course, he said that. The population of the world needs to be reduced, ideally down to 500 million inhabitants, which means, you know, about 8 billion people got to go. So he has mosquito labs in Florida and Colombia. Suddenly there are domestic malaria cases. The media is saying it's because of climate change. Gates invested $168 plus million in a malaria vaccine. He made $180 plus billion from the COVID vaccines. Bill Gates is the largest investor in vaccines, and there's a pandemic. Bill Gates is the largest owner of farmland in America, and they create a food crisis. Of course, the answer to that is bugs, right? And Bill Gates is the largest investor in mosquito factories, and there's a malaria outbreak in America. Unbelievable. So, you know, there are definitely some people that just need to be rounded up. Crimes against humanity, great way of putting it. Quick headline here. Jim Caviezel says we can't end child sex trafficking without fixing the border first. We've been saying that on Radio Free Redoubt and the Morning Commute for years. You can't fix any of this unless you fix the border. But this is really timely because the movie Jim Caviezel stars in, where he portrays Tim Ballard, true story, true guy, true ministry, the Operation Underground Railroad, rescuing children from the sex slave and human trafficking. That movie comes out tomorrow, July 3rd, 4th, and 5th. If you haven't gotten your tickets, you can go to angel.com, or that's right, angel.com, and you can get your tickets there. You can also go to the Operation Underground Railroad Project and get tickets and watch the trailer there as well. From Todd Starnes, this is just, you know, it's coming to a point where, let me just read this story. California atheists are celebrating after the Albany City Council removed a historic cross from a public park and stuffed it into a closet. That's ironic, even for California. The 20-foot cross had been erected by the Lions Club in 1971 and was traditionally illuminated on Christmas and Easter. The Albany Lions Club president, Kevin Pope, said there's a lot of people who love it being up there. A lot of people go up there and pray and have church services. It's sacred ground to us. Taking it down shows their intolerance toward Christian values. Well, it's just getting started. Unless we're willing to fight for our Christian values, I'm not sure the way they are so aggressively going after our children to sexually pervert them and are refusing to uphold their oath to protect our borders, squandering money, getting us into war, poisoning our people, lying, stealing our prosperity and wealth through lies like the climate hoax and so on. And they just keep doing whatever they want. Nothing really seems to be changing. I'm not sure if there's a peaceful way out of this to restore America. I'm just not. Which kind of takes us back to the whole premise of the Declaration of Independence and everything that led up to the drafting of that document. And I don't just mean the events in the months or even just a few years leading up to that. I'm talking decades, if not centuries, of influencing doctrines and ideals that led to that by Christian men who founded this country. So we'll talk about that when we come back. In segment two, I'm going to talk about the Declaration of Independence and some of the prices that were paid by those who pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor for us to have this most amazing, exceptional country that's ever existed on the face of the earth. Stay right there, Patriots. We'll be back in a moment.
Are you prepared to defend yourself in the dark? A weapon light helps you identify and even deter threats in low light. But it can be difficult to find a secure and comfortable holster. At Works, we design and build holsters for Glock and Sig Sauer pistols with lights. Our precision fit holsters will help you carry with confidence so you're ready to defend yourself day and night. Go to worksholsters.com. Find your gun and light in our holster finder. Select your preferred carry style and order your holster today.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, Patriots, to segment two of episode 23-17, 17th podcast of 2023. And for civil defense communications, we are at AMCON 5. No known threats to our telecommunications grid or our power grid or telecommunications infrastructure. And in this segment here, I want to get into the Declaration of Independence, the founders, and I want to share some of my notes that I took from this documentary that I watched this weekend. There's an article over at Redoubt News called Patriots Challenge. It's contributed by an author, Bob Stallingstad, Schillingstad, rather. And a lot of people don't realize the price that was paid by people who had a lot to lose. These are not just bums or, people that were just poor and they really didn't have anything to lose. These people had a lot on the line. So I'm going to share this first part with you that talks about exactly the price that was paid by some of these men. And the article reads, "As we celebrate the 4th of July and thank God for his hand upon our country and the freedom that we enjoy, we need to remind ourselves of the sacrifices made by those first patriots. Have you ever wondered what happened to the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence? 5 signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons serving in the Revolutionary Army. Another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 fought and died from wounds or hardships of the Revolutionary War. They signed and they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. What kind of men were they? 24 were lawyers and jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers and large plantation owners. The rest were writers and clergymen, men of means, well-educated. But they signed the Declaration of Independence knowing full well that the penalty would be death if they were captured. Carter Braxton of Virginia, a wealthy planter and trader, saw his ships swept from the seas by the British Navy. He sold his home and properties to pay his debts and died in rags. Thomas McKean was so hounded by the British that he was forced to move his family almost constantly. He served in the Congress without pay, and his family was kept in hiding. His possessions were taken from him, and poverty was his reward. Vandals or soldiers looted the properties of Dillery, Hall, Clymer, Walton, Gwinnett, Hayward, Rutledge, and Middleton. At the Battle of Yorktown, Thomas Nelson, Jr. noted that the British General Cornwallis had taken over the Nelson home for his headquarters. He quietly urged General George Washington to open fire. The home was destroyed, and Nelson died bankrupt. Francis Lewis had his home and properties destroyed. The enemy jailed his wife, and she died within a few months. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside as she was dying. Their 13 children fled for their lives. His fields and his grist mill were laid to waste. More than a year, he lived in forests and caves, returning home to find his wife dead and his children vanished. A few weeks later, he died from exhaustion and a broken heart. Norris and Livingston suffered similar fates. That's a very heavy, heavy price to pay. They put their names to a document that we're supposed to be celebrating July 4th, 1776. And I have the first portion of that I'm going to share with you. And it was penned mostly by Thomas Jefferson, of course, John Adams and Benjamin Franklin were also advisors, kind of editors that were involved in the discussion. But the bulk of this was the responsibility of Thomas Jefferson. And this is the first part of the Declaration of Independence. When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume, among the powers of the earth, the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shewn that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. It is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former system of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. And then the next portion of the Declaration actually articulates those 27 grievances. Some of those sound eerily familiar to what we are seeing today from our own government. Some of them are issues that the colonists dealt with that we don't have to deal with, but we are dealing with such atrocious tyranny, injuries, usurpation, a long train of abuses that the founding fathers could never even have been able to wrap their minds around, like the state taking children from parents to transition them and pervert them sexually and expose them to pedophiles. These are things, that's just one item in a whole host of issues that if ever there was a time when you could legitimately say we are at the point the founding fathers were, that something needs to be done to throw off chains of tyranny, to alter or abolish our government, to form a new one that will uphold and defend our God-given rights. But I want to share this documentary because these ideas, a lot of people think that the founding fathers just conceived of some of these ideas in a vacuum, that they just came up with these on their own, but they actually didn't. These influencing ideals came from, well, up to 500 years before with the Magna Carta. There's a great documentary I want to share with you guys. I would really like for each and every one of you to watch it yourselves. It's called The True Christian History of America by Chris Pinto, Bill Earle, Larry Dykes, and John Hedgecoth. The True Christian History of America is a powerful documentary showing the Bible-based Christian origins of the early American view of freedom, tracing the principles of liberty back to England and the Great Reformation. So once again, that's The True Christian History of America. You just type in Chris Pinto. If you are on Telegram, you can go to The Morning Commute, and the link to that video is posted there if you didn't get a chance to write this down. But I want to share just some of my notes from this. Very fascinating, and there were actually a couple things that I learned. One of the influencing documents that the founding fathers referenced was called the Vindicae Contra Tyrannos. It was written by Philip de Mornay. Now, Philip de Mornay wrote this after a French Huguenot, a military leader, Christian, was killed, along with 70,000 Protestants massacred. And this is when they started to, you know, ask the question, is it okay for a Christian to resist? I mean, the government is God. God institutes governments. So to go against governments is to go against God, right? The king is law, or rex lex, right? I'm going to come back to that here in just a moment. But this pamphlet, the Vindicae Contra Tyrannos, asks the question whether it be lawful to resist a prince who doth infringe the law of God or ruin his church By whom and how far is it lawful to resist? So in here is an excerpt. If in this case it had been lawful to the Jewish people, he's answering the question, whether it be lawful to resist a prince who doth infringe the laws of God or ruin his church, by which and how far is it lawful? So it answers its own question in this book, in this pamphlet, the Vindicate Contra Tyrannos. If in this case it had been lawful to the Jewish people, the which may be easily gathered from the books of the Old Testament, yea, if it had been enjoyed them, I believe it will not be denied that the same must be allowed to the whole people of any Christian kingdom or country whatsoever. It is then lawful for Israel. It is then lawful for Israel to resist the king who would overthrow the law of God, and not only so, but also they ought to know that in neglecting to perform his duty, they make themselves culpable of the same crime and shall bear the same punishment with their like king. And this was in reference to the basis was this for this was 2 Chronicles 15:13. John Adams said the Vindicate was one of the leading books by which England's and America's present liberties have been established. Very interesting. Now let me go to Lex Rex, which is the opposite of Rex Lex. Rex Lex is the king is the law. Lex Rex is basically the law is king. So there was a Scottish minister named Samuel Rutherford who wrote Lex Rex. Not only does the magistrate lose his authority when he violates the law, but it is a right and perhaps a duty for the people to resist such violations. This book, there's a book called Introduction to Lex Rex, which was written by John Rowland. And in the introduction, it says that it laid the foundation for the contractarian and libertarian ideas that came to be embodied in the U.S. Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And a lot of this influencing information, influencing ideals came from these early writings where these Christians were responding to tyranny. One of the documents that influenced our founding fathers was Magna Carta, which was written in 1215. Section 61 of the Magna Carta provided that if the king, in that time, King John, did not follow the provisions of the charter, the barons should have the right to correct the king by force until the king should follow the articles of the charter. And in 1687, William Penn said the excellent privilege of liberty and property being a first reprint and facsimile of the first American Magna Carta. Paul Revere, his seal for the state of Massachusetts, used the Magna Carta, the Latin inscription, which reads, "By the sword we seek peace, but peace only under liberty." The point is that the founding fathers, the influencing documents on them were over what they wrote in the Declaration of Independence are biblically based and historically based in response to tyranny. And they're timeless. The deep state, the left, the globalists, the anti-God crowd, however you want to put it, they want us to believe that the founding documents, including the Constitution, are antiquated, that they're anachronistic, they've outlived their usefulness, they don't apply to modern times. They apply to modern, they're timeless. All the way back to 1215 AD. Well, it led to some of these other books. Let me go back to John Knox here real quick. He wrote one called The Appellation. And this is John Knox. heavily influenced the founding fathers in their ideologies and influenced what they wrote in the Declaration of Independence. John Knox wrote, "True it is, God has commanded kings to be obeyed, but likewise true it is that the things which they commit against his glory, he has commanded no obedience." And of course, that was influenced by Psalm 149, 5 through 9. "Let the high praises of God be in their mouth, and a two-edged sword in their hand, to execute vengeance upon the heathen and punishments upon the people, to bind their kings with chains and their nobles with fetters of iron, to execute upon them the judgment written, this honor have all his saints. Praise ye the Lord." Now John Hancock, whose signature is most prominent on the Declaration of Independence, wrote this, "Resistance to tyranny becomes the Christian and social duty of each individual. Continue steadfast and with a proper sense of your dependence on God. Nobly defend those rights which heaven gave and no man ought to take from us." Of course, I have like 4 pages of notes that I took from this. I don't have time to go into them all, but I just want to encourage you to watch that documentary and learn more about your heritage. You might learn a couple things that you didn't know before. So with that, we'll go ahead and take a break and come back. Segment 3, World War 3, and nobody needs an assault weapon until you do. Stay right there. Are you prepared for an economic, socio-political collapse in America? Do you wonder how something like that could be possible? What would that even look like? I recommend Glenn Tate's 10-book series titled 299 Days. From a lawyer and government insider's perspective, he lays out a plausible scenario that could very well come about if we continue on the path we're on as a country. Through his fictional character, he lays out his own real-life journey to prepare himself and his family for the possibility of a future full of difficult challenges and what seem like impossible choices. 299 Days is a high-action dystopian novel written from the perspective of the average Joe American and outlines realistic plans and action steps that you could implement to prepare yourself and those around you for the difficult possibilities ahead. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
There is no retreat but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable. And let it come! I repeat it, sir. Let it come! It is in vain, sir, to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace. But there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death!
All right, welcome back, Patriots, to segment 3 of Radio Free Redoubt, the Sunday night podcast. In this segment, we'll talk about World War III supposedly starting July 11th. Yeah, we'll see. But it isn't good what these evil, vile globalists have planned. We'll get to that in just a moment. First, I want to talk about Europe, particularly France. It's very interesting to see that the news, the legacy news, is burying so much information that's coming from there. And they're talking about it less and less. In fact, the stories that they're coming out with are, well, riots continued Saturday night, but much less severe. That is Bravo Sierra. The people that are on the ground are saying it's worse. It's getting worse every night, and tonight's worse than it was last night. It's not getting better. Now, maybe tonight it'll start easing up. I don't know. They've crossed the point now. They've burned the library of Marseille to the ground. I have a list of things that the French citizens are having to endure right now. They're scared for their lives. And this is in dozens of cities across France. And now it's spilling over. I expect Germany to go up next. But so much is coming out from people on the ground with Twitter, and they're putting these updates out, images, pictures. This isn't Syria, Iraq, or Afghanistan. This is France, where 9% of the population has brought down entire cities. Well, those 9% of the populations is hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Muslims. And they're saying immigrants are rioting. Well, these people are raping and quoting Quran while they're raping women. They're beating people, burning buildings, multiple people dead. And CNN, BBC, where are you now? People are asking. So this was just, yesterday morning, Saturday. So this is results from Friday's rioting. 41 police stations attacked, 79 police injured, and these are super conservative numbers. I've got another report that's they're showing 100 and I'll pull it up. Several 270 officers wounded in this other report. But anyway, according to this one posting, at that moment they were aware of 79 police injured, 2,560 fires in streets, 1,360 cars burned, 234 buildings burned. Some of these are apartment buildings. Some of these are shopping centers. Some of them are police stations. 45,000 police deployed. And of course, now they're rolling out armor and the military. the police guild, the police union, whatever it is, police advocacy organization, is calling for Macron to call a state of emergency. They're saying you need to call a civil war. This is a civil war. They have now automatic weapons, and I'll get to that in just a moment. According to the PoliceTribune.com, French riots have now spread to Belgium, Switzerland, and reports of rioters targeting Christians and conservatives. At least 40 attacks on police stations, 270 officers wounded. More than 3,000 rioters have been arrested as violence rocked numerous cities in France for the fifth night in a row. And of course, now as I'm doing this show, I'm seeing headlines saying the sixth night of riots are underway now. Of course, this all came from an officer-involved shooting of a Muslim teen who ran at a traffic stop, or he took off with his vehicle. The police officer shot him, and I'm not getting into whether that was justified or unjustified, but it does not justify what they're doing. And really, all this is a trigger. This is an excuse. What we're seeing with the Muslims carrying out their jihad, hijra, taking over France. They've been saying, we are going to take over France. We are going to outnumber you. You will be Muslim. They've been saying that for years. So it was always going to come to this. It was what we're seeing now was always coming. It would just be a matter of a triggering event, because when multiple rapes of women are reported, there's no riots. There's no burning in the streets when they kill the 12-year-old girl after gang raping her and stuffing her in a suitcase. No riots, no uprising, anything like this. But this is the writing, Arab immigrants waging war across France. They're releasing animals from zoos. Now people are reporting zebras, elephants, lions, other animals loose in the streets. There are some videos that are circulating social media that have been tracked down that are actually from 2002, and they're not from this, but they're being attributed to happening this weekend. So there's bad information out there, but it is true that they have released animals from the zoos, and people have seen zebras, elephants, and lions, and goats, and everything else. In Nanterre, a local Holocaust memorial was vandalized and desecrated by migrants. RPGs, military-grade rifles, and belt-fed machine guns are now being seen on the streets. Someone says, it's almost like it was planned. Well, it was planned. See, the Islamic jihad terrorist experts have been warning that the mosques are military facilities. They have been smuggling in weapons. And of course, they're saying, well, now they have, here's a headline. French police are fired upon with American rifles that may have come from Ukraine. Well, maybe they did come from Ukraine. I don't know, but I do know that all of these intelligence experts have been warning that Muslims have been smuggling in weapons for years and stashing them at mosques. The mosques are the arms caches for this future jihad when they decide to go operational. Well, they're getting them from raiding police stations. Well, that might be true, but police stations don't have belt-fed machine guns. They have the equivalent of like an AR-15, M16, M4, a soldier's type of weapon. Not belt-fed machine guns and not RPGs. RPGs is not something that's stored at a police station. A rocket-propelled grenade is a weapon of war. And whether it came from Ukraine or whether it came from Afghanistan or Libya or Syria or wherever, they've been smuggling them in for years. And John Guandolo, former counterterrorism expert on Islamic terrorism, is warning that in the United States, the mosques are being used as weapons caches. So what's happening there is going to be happening in America at some point in the future. Something else, too, that the slipstream media does not want people to know, and something that I've seen several videos of, nationalists, French Christian nationalists patrolling their streets to provide security in neighborhoods. You can't find that on any of your, these are young men out there that are traveling in packs, patrolling their neighborhoods, going up against the Antifa and Islamic hoodlums, rioters, insurgents, insurrectionists, whatever you want to call them. And they're taking them on. I've seen several videos of this, but nothing to be found anywhere. The only thing you can find about Christian nationalists or French nationalists is white supremacy, racists, all the other typical labeling. But basically, this is like the French version of the Proud Boys. They don't want that to build momentum, that citizens are taking the law into their own hands. But guess what? You allow them to disarm you. There's no police to come to save you. The police are running and hiding. They are outnumbered. They can't get enough backup. It's all they can do to extract each other out of an area and get out of there with their lives. And the citizens are left to fend for themselves. You can never allow yourself to be disarmed, because nobody needs an assault weapon until you need one. And once you need one, there's no going back. There's no saying that was a dumb policy. We shouldn't have done that. Oh, we shouldn't have given up our guns. Oh, look at us. Now we can't defend ourselves. We'll just call the police. The police can't help you. Nobody is coming. You have to be responsible for your own security, for your community, for your home, for your family, for yourself. And if you're ever in a situation where you need an AR-15, a combat rifle, there's not a substitute. Because some of these people are trying to defend themselves with single action, single shot, bird shot shotguns up against mobs of hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people coming down the streets. It's a good time to be out of the cities. It's a good time to be living in a rural community. And a lot of people are in agreement with that right now. But even your smaller towns are getting hit with this. So anyway, you have to be responsible for your own security. The French people are learning that right now. And now in Libya, there are hundreds of thousands of men. They call migrants, but there are no children. There's no women. These are all military-age men that are walking to the ports in Libya, being transported to Italy right now. This is an invasion. And even then, you still got these people that are sick in the head, carrying their banners saying they're not dangerous, they're in danger. Refugees are welcome. The police are going to... There's a video with police, a pack of them, it must have been a couple dozen of them, moving forward to stop looters who are burning and breaking stuff and attacking people. And there's a French woman on her knees crying and begging. This is Stockholm syndrome on steroids. She falls to her knees and pleads, crying for the police not to arrest the rioters because it's racist. That's somebody who's just too far gone. There's some people just can't be helped. You can't fix stupid. You can fix ignorance. You can educate somebody, but you can't fix stupid. So let me talk real quick about World War III, and I'll take a break. Bring on Lady Liberty. Get her. She's in the studio now. I'll fire up her mic here for segment 4. In Yahoo News, Ukraine is demanding a signal for joining NATO. So, listen to this. Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky urged NATO on Wednesday to send his country a clear signal that it can join the military alliance when Russia's war in Ukraine ends, saying he would like to get that signal at the next month's NATO summit in Lithuania. That's coming up on the 11th. Quote, "We understand that while the war is going on, we can't become a member of NATO. However, we need to be sure that after the war, we will become a member. That is the signal we want to get. That after the war," third time he says this, "Ukraine will become a NATO member." Well, then there's this. From the Gibraltar Messenger, Victoria Nuland, head of U.S. State Department, has officially stated in a video conference with Kiev that World War III will effectively begin on July 11th, stating that the U.S. and its partners will fight as long as it takes, 16 years or more. The scheduled date was chosen to coincide with the NATO summit, a one-day meeting in Lithuania. So then there's this from Before It's News. World War III on July 11th. Reportedly, at a deleted video conference with Kiev officials, Nuland stated that World War III will effectively begin on July 11th, stating that the U.S. and its partners will fight as long as it takes. The scheduled date was chosen to coincide. So basically, they're saying the same thing. So far, we've got, when the war is over with Russia, then we'll join. But she's saying World War III, what would kick off World War III? Bringing Ukraine into NATO. That would kick off World War III. So, Victoria Nuland, U.S. Secretary, U.S. State Department, has said that World War III is going to begin on July 11th when this NATO meeting takes place. Well, here's another one. This is from the Prime Minister of Estonia, Kaja Kallas is her name. She said, Ukraine is in for a surprise regarding NATO membership at the July summit. Quote, I'm sure that the only security guarantee that really works is NATO, but I don't want to somehow spoil the surprise of the summit in Vilnius, Estonia, she said, addressing the NATO Secretary General. We don't want to spoil the surprise. There's going to be a surprise. World War III is going to kick off, and it's going to have to do with Ukraine joining NATO. That's a week and a half from now. That doesn't mean missiles are going to start flying on July 11th, but it will definitely accelerate things. Could missiles be flying on the 15th, the 20th, by August 1st? We don't know. But what we do know is that these people want a war with Russia. And they're in the positions to do it. They know exactly what buttons to push. So I would say double down on your preparations, your off-grid backup power, food, fuel, everything you need to become self-reliant. I would accelerate those things if you were planning on doing things over the next month or 2 months or by the end of the summer. I would do it quicker, sooner, rather than later. Okay, let's take a break. Segment 4, codename 1 each, will be joining us. This is the voice of the American Redoubt.
Now getting back to school. I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the 7th grade. I went to the 7th grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. And I used to, this is true. I work in the summer, I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher. Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell is, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representative chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders. Not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation. One nation. Meaning, so blessed by God. Indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear or some sort of retaliation. And justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great redoubt, North Idaho. Every day, I sell homes and land to bankers, doctors, economists, scientists, military folks, and more for good reason. They all know what's coming and want to secure safety and peace for their family. They've done the research and discovered that North Idaho's superior environment, food insecurity, surrounded by more like-minded patriots than anywhere in America. At www.revrealty.us, you can read stories about North Idaho's weather, spring development, growing food, solar, and alternative energy. Additionally, every article has a beautiful quote from the brilliant mind of Thomas Jefferson. We also give you free access to our listings, so feel free to browse our inventory or fill out our short form, and we'll do the searching for you. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us. And God bless you.
Welcome back, Patriots, to the fourth and final segment. Got a code name segment for one each. It's a military term.
Well, okay.
Welcome to segment four.
Thank you. I hope the one each thing is actually positive.
It's just it's about accountability. It's just to make sure that we're accounting for the one each.
Oh, for ammo?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, really? Okay. So now I don't know. Are you pulling my leg or not?
Oh, yeah. You could be issued a box of MREs, 12 each, right?
Okay.
12 of each, but it's just a... Yeah, it's military vernacular. So one each.
Okay,
that means, so there's only one of you.
I'll just take your word. Yes, I'm unique, just like everyone else.
Exactly. Exactly. Me too.
Right.
All right. Well, we've got some pretty cool stuff lined up. We are going to be visiting. I mentioned in segment one in the news and commentary, we're going to be watching The Sound of Freedom with Jim Caviezel in that.
That's right.
And we'll be talking about it tomorrow morning on the morning commute and segment four here.
Yeah. Yeah. Because this is something that, well, like we've been pointing out on our show for quite some time, that the child trafficking, the child rape, the child murder, the butchering, the horrible things that is actually happening.
Slavery.
The slavery, all of these things are so unbelievable to even think that they're happening that. It's very hard to even wrap your mind around the fact that it's true.
Yeah.
Let alone that it's happening in our nation, and the majority of it's happening because of our wide open border.
Right. I mean, you think of, you know, child trafficking or some, you think type, you know,
Happened somewhere in some weird obscure country.
Thailand or
Or
maybe, you know, Eastern former Soviet bloc, you know, country or something, but in America, it's just,
it's
astounding.
Yep.
It's shocking.
You can't even hardly believe it. And then once you're actually kind of forced to believe that this is actually happening, then there's the other part that goes, oh my gosh, I don't even really want to have to think about that. But that's not biblical. That's not biblical at all.
Well, and then it brings you to the next logical point, and that is, what can I do about it?
Right, exactly. And yeah. even then, that's a big question mark also. What on earth do we do about it? We can't even, it's not like something that you see in your daily life,
right.
where you could just go to a certain place where you know that you've seen it, or where you know that they do that type of thing, and go in there and raid it, you know, save the children and just, you know, basically blow the place up, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's not that easy for Americans to try to figure out, what do we do about this? This can't happen, first of all.
Right.
It is the world's most evil, the most disgusting, horrific thing in our lifetime.
Well, you know, you're at the point where you're just like, okay, just show me where to go. That building? Okay, let's get all the kids out.
Right, right.
Let's bar the place and burn it to the ground.
Exactly.
And yep. Simple. Move on to the next one. So just give me a grid coordinate.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And, but you know, there are people who are doing this for a living.
Right.
And they've got the intelligence resources. They've got the manpower. They've got the white hats in the federal government. People that are really patriots that are all for this. They know how to, you know, work through the system that we have, the deep state system, and still be effective. So the best thing for us to do, Joe Citizen, is to support those people who are dedicating themselves, and that's their ministry and their mission, and they do have all the resources, and they are going after it to support them.
Right, exactly. And not only that, but I believe that after this film, this documentary has, you know, been in the box office for these 3 days, the third, the fourth, and the fifth, I think that the 2 million people that are buying their tickets or have already bought their tickets to see this, I think we're going to see an enormous explosion of demand that this is stopped.
Yeah.
And I also suspect that they're probably going to offer different things that we can each do to dive in and try to help. Because I know for a fact that when I stand before the Lord, I don't want him to ask me the question, this was the most horrific thing that ever happened in your lifetime. What did you do about it?
Right.
And I don't want to say to him, well, I was real sheepish about it and didn't know what to do, so I just did nothing. I would not ever want to face the Lord and say something that daft to him.
Right.
Especially when the entire Bible teaching is the Good Samaritan. If somebody is having a problem or trouble, help them. Do everything you can to help them, let alone a little abandoned child who's been kidnapped and is now facing more horror than we can even comprehend. And
that's
so
right.
So we have to. And so I'm really looking forward to whatever movements spring up to put this to an end, whether that be the force closure of our border or just where that ends. I'm really looking forward to diving in and trying to help as much as I possibly can, because it has to stop. It's absolutely the most evil thing on the planet.
And I think one of the really good things that is going to come from this is going to shove the creep perverts back into the closet where they belong.
They need to be charged and executed.
Mel Gibson has said he's about ready to start dropping names and expose the whole pedophile world in Hollyweird. And it needs to be, the message needs to go out that this is unacceptable behavior. If you have this little fantasy thing in your mind, then you crawl right back into your closet and you keep it there until you commit suicide or whatever you do. It doesn't belong in our world. You don't come out of the closet with that. You don't go to those websites. We're going to crush you. We're going to find you. We're going to crush you.
Right. And exactly. Just like Governor Ron DeSantis passed that bill saying that the only appropriate punishment for convicted pedophiles is the death penalty.
That's right.
And I so wholeheartedly back him on
Absolutely.
That. Absolutely. And so what we're seeing here is an interesting, as we've talked about before, Congress has been investigating this as well. And so we have a clip here from Jim Caviezel, who is describing more of the details associated with statistics and whatnot about child sex trafficking. And please listen now to what he has to say.
Learn from this film about what is driving this child sex trafficking.
Well, obviously the money, it's $152 billion a year business. And to put that in perspective, that would be every NFL football team, pro sport in the U.S., also World Cup soccer, and then sending your kid to college. Every 18-year-old gets to go to Stanford University for 4 years.
Yeah.
That would be $152 billion.
Mm-hmm. What is your hope for this film?
Well, right now, we're looking for 2 million people to come to the theater for the 2 million trafficked children. Now, it's a lot bigger empire than that because there's organ harvesting and all of that other stuff.
Can we end this scourge? I mean, it is the most evil thing on the planet.
Well, you got to start with having a south border. Okay, we don't have a south border. And that means we're, you know, celebrating Fourth of July.
We're complicit in it. There's no question about that.
And the media needs to go down there. Why don't they go down there? They need to meet these agents. It's horror.
Yeah.
Hopefully that'll occur. But the politicians aren't going to move until the people move.
Right.
That is just awesome. That is good. That is good to hear that. The information he's putting out to put that into perspective about how much money is involved in this.
Well, it's frightening. And it was just like President Trump said that the sex traffickers are even stopping the trafficking of drugs because they make way more money off of trafficking children and women.
Yeah.
And so, like Jim Caviezel just said, the child trafficking industry is making $152 billion per year.
Right.
And that doesn't even get into organ sales and other horrors such as that. I mean, this is that's as mind-warping as it gets. And so we've also got a clip here where Senator Josh Hawley is basically calling Human Health Services out on saying, hey, you guys are supposed to be in charge of this stuff. And there's 80,000 plus children missing under your watch. What on earth is going on with HHS? So listen.
Well, and the people in the HHS that are coming forward saying that are trying to do something. And
they're being shoved out.
Yeah, they're being shoved out by the higher ups.
That's right.
Those people need to be hunted down and rooted out.
Exactly. So listen now to what Senator Hawley has to say.
Let's look at some of the things that we've learned about what's going on over at HHS that Secretary Becerra is doing. Here's some quotes from employees at HHS. At least five Health and Human Services staff members said that they were pushed out after raising concerns about child safety. This is all from the New York Times, by the way. Mr. Becerra told the Office of Refugee Resettlement Director that if she could not increase the number of discharges of children, he'd find somebody who would. Next, 20% of kids have to be released every week or you get dinged. It's a conveyor belt of children being forced through the system. And what's the priority of HHS? Just get them out as fast as we can. They go to factories. They go to slave labor. No. I've written to the FBI and asked the FBI, where are the 80,000 plus children this administration's lost? They don't know. I've said it's your responsibility to go get them. It's a direct violation of child labor laws. They're not doing anything. Nobody's doing anything. It's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. And the fact that the administration won't come and sit there and answer questions to this committee is absurd. And it is nothing more than cowardice. They don't want to answer questions. They don't want to be responsible. They don't want to take responsibility for this. So let the record reflect that this administration has let tens of thousands of children be sold into slavery, and they are doing nothing about it.
Well, are they going to get rooted out?
I hope so.
They're heading in the right direction.
I think that once this movie comes out, there's going to be such an uproar, Congress will probably feel quite empowered to really, really bear down on this and go after these criminals big time. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is right on Holly's heels here. And listen to what she has to say. She's having a great discussion with a guy that we really like, Chad Wolf, who was the former undersecretary of the Department of Homeland Security before he that was under Trump where he was willing to work, apparently. Good for him. And it's unfortunate that Mayorkas has not been impeached yet, because if he were to be impeached anytime soon, which we're hoping for,
They're talking the 6th. They're going to begin the process.
That's right. So hopefully that'll be productive. And Chad Wolf would be my very first pick to have right back in that position. And because he's got his head on straight, thank goodness. So listen here to what Marjorie Taylor Greene and Chad Wolf have to say about it.
We're missing 85,000 children. 85,000 children. And while Democrats across the aisle on this committee want to talk about families being separated under the Trump administration, I'd like to introduce for the record, Mr. Chairman, a letter from Customs and Border Protection saying that the Biden administration is ending DNA testing, familial DNA testing, that was at the end of May, May 31st, 2023. So when you talk about separating children, we have the Biden administration not even testing who these adults and these children are. And I can't comprehend it. Everyone in this room knows what an Amber Alert is. We all get them on our phones, right? This is when a child has been kidnapped. And we are so concerned in this country about children who have been kidnapped that we have something called an Amber Alert, notifying all of us that there is a missing child. 85,000 children missing, migrant children missing in the United States, is the same thing as 85,000 Amber Alerts. It's unbelievable. Mr. Wolf, many of the children are brought to the United States by coyotes and human smugglers. In your view, how is Secretary Mayorkas responsible for exacerbating the unaccompanied children humanitarian crisis?
Well, it's not just one action. It's obviously a culmination of a variety of different incentives. It's an incentive structure that has been created over the past 27 months that allows individuals to come into the country and remain into the country. When you exempt UACs from Title 42, that sends a signal to the cartels and to everyone else to smuggle as many children across that border as humanly possible. We know they're going to stay in the United States. So when you make these categorical pronouncements, the cartels are watching and they are paying attention. And just to key off on your last point, not only did DNA testing about to end, the vetting of sponsors also ended at HHS under this administration. No more vetting, detailed, in-depth vetting of sponsors. We also increased vetting of other household members. We didn't just want to know who the sponsor was. We wanted to know other household members and dive into those backgrounds. That was eliminated as well. Site visits, not every home was visited, but random site visits to make sure that those children were where they said they would be, also eliminated under this administration. So the idea that somehow they're protecting children because they needed to facilitate the flow out of HHS facilities quicker and quicker is a misnomer.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, not just a misnomer. That's criminal cover up right there.
Yes, exactly.
They're facilitating it.
Right.
They're removing the protective measures. Meanwhile, they're crying about, oh, you're separating families from children. When they don't care about the children.
No, they don't.
They're feeding them into a machine.
Yes, exactly. And as we're seeing, and as Jim Caviezel was saying also, that the CIA is one of the biggest benefactors off of this child trafficking, not to mention the Biden family, who has their hands all over it, right? This whole subject. And we all know that they will make money any way possible because they're complete traitors as well as, pedophiles.
Criminals.
In fact, Hunter refers to his own dad as Pedo Pete. And it's no wonder that that guy, who is supposed to be the sitting president, is allowing this child trafficking to flourish with a wide open border.
Removing all barriers to it.
Absolutely. And why wouldn't he if his own son calls him Pedo Pete? And so here we have an article from the Epic Times. This is actually a tiny bit of news and good news in the right direction associated with this particular subject. And this title is Federal Agency Forced to Build Part of Trump's Border Wall.
Oh, good. Well,
woohoo! Imagine that. They were supposed to do that in the first place. It says here that the Department of Homeland Security said last Friday that it will build 20 more miles, just 20 more miles of the U.S.-Mexico border wall, carrying out some of former President Donald Trump's 2016 campaign vow. Until and unless Congress cancels these funds, like, why would they do that? You know, right? It says, until and unless Congress cancels these funds, the law requires DHS to use the funds consistent with their appropriated purpose. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection said in a statement announcing the wall construction that had previously been called off by Biden on his very first day into office.
Yeah, they started moving the construction materials away from the border.
Yep, that's right. And so it says that that statement said the approximate 20 miles of steel bollard panels will be erected along the Border Patrol's Rio Grande Valley sector as mandated by a 2019 border barrier appropriation under Trump's administration. It noted that a substantial portion of unobligated funds that had been diverted from the Department of Defense have been returned to the Pentagon. But listen to this. So you might wonder, well, what happened to all of that money, right?
Right.
Trump had appropriated that much money to build the entire wall.
That's right.
It says here that about $190 million is left in the 2019 spending bill, said DHS, adding that it first attempted to use funds for other priority projects. Imagine that.
Wow.
What, like, other priority projects, you might ask?
Probably, well, Ukraine.
You're not going to believe. Yeah, it's right up there. It says, such as environmental and other remediation measures, system attributes for existing barrier and environmental mitigation projects.
Oh my gosh.
And so they used it for environmental projects. Are you kidding?
These people are sick.
Yeah.
They're sick. They're sick in the head.
They are just permanently demented. It says, in addition, DHS authorized the Border Patrol to move forward with the Yuma, Andrade, and El Centro Calexico fence replacement projects to mitigate immediate life, safety, and operational risks to the local community, migrants, and Border Patrol agents in the area, and that both projects will replace dilapidated segments of legacy fencing that presently create safety and security concerns for Border Patrol agents, migrants, and the surrounding community. And so the whole point being that, now they're, at least the scrutiny is causing them to build some of this wall.
Right.
And so it says here that the border issues have again been thrust into the limelight in recent days as the Florida Governor Ron DeSantis unveiled his immigration plan at a stop in Texas. And so there he is from Florida over in Texas saying that he would declare a U.S. state of emergency, reinstate a policy that required a number of would-be illegal immigrants to remain in Mexico before their immigration court hearings, terminate the controversial catch-and-release policy, and more. And if elected, the governor would target Mexican drug cartels and initiate new rules of engagement for federal agents at the border. He said, we have to establish the rule of law in this country. And what you're seeing right now is an abuse of asylum. It's a lot less appetizing to make a trip like that, knowing that you don't qualify in the first place, and you're going to have to wait on the other side of the border before you get a decision.
Yeah, for years.
Yep. And so, granted, he's not going to make it.
No, I think that was that is an excellent statement from our future vice president.
Yes, there we go.
Absolutely. Yep, I agree
right,
with him.
Right, yep.
All right, well, thank you for those updates.
Yep, you're welcome.
All right, we'll bring those audio clips for tomorrow morning's morning commute as well for our listeners there. So
tune in
each morning, and including the 4th of July. We'll be there 7 a.m. on the 4th of July for the morning commute too.
That's right.
Okay, guys, you have a blessed and a safe week, an awesome Independence Day. Remember your heritage. It's who you are. It's who we are as a nation. It's what makes us exceptional. It's our heritage. that does that. So anyway, if you are a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, my name is your name too. Good night.